This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
No matter who you are, things in your life probably aren't going as expected, whatever that means. But the things you are doing right now, no matter what they are, that's your life. It's not a plan B. I'm your host, Madeline Mortensen, and you're listening to This Is Not a Backup Plan.
Hi, friends. I hope that you are having a great day. Today's guest is someone that I followed on social media for a while and whose work I found very compelling and that I really admire. It's Rachel Garrett, and she's founded a nonprofit organization called Common Thread. Common Thread works to help teenagers who live in Utah and who have been impacted by the foster care system and impacted by trauma in their lives. Something that I started doing last year is volunteering as a CASA, which is a court-appointed special advocate. So I did my training last fall, and for this past year, I've been assigned to some cases for kids who have been removed from their families and are now in the foster care system as the process of what will happen to them in their future is carried out by the court system. And what I do as a CASA is I spend time with the kid, I get to know them, I provide them support, and I provide information back to their attorney who's representing them to help that attorney make the best decisions for those kids. And it's been a really, really special volunteer opportunity. I really loved getting to know the kids. I feel lucky that I get to spend time with them and that I get to advocate for them. And so as someone who sees firsthand, like, the need to support kids with these experiences, I've really loved Rachel's work. And I just really wanted to talk to her about her path to that work, how it fits into her ambition story, why it matters to her, and what led her there. So I loved getting to know her more. I loved hearing more about her story, and I hope that you'll enjoy it too.
Good morning, Rachel. Thank you so much for joining me. Will you introduce yourself before we get started?
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. My name is Rachel Garrett, and I live in Utah. I have a master's degree in psychology with an emphasis on child and adolescent behaviors. I have two kids. I'm a licensed foster parent, a former high school teacher, a licensed CASA, and I work part-time for Trauma Informed Utah. So I work in a lot of trauma-dense spaces in my life. And yeah, I'm just happy to be here with you today.
Yeah, I'm so excited to have you. I really love like watching the work that you do. One of the things that you do that has really intrigued me that I'd love to start with as an entry point is Common Thread. Will you tell people a little bit about what that is and a little bit about its origin story?
Yes, of course. So I am the founder and executive director of Common Thread. It's a local nonprofit in Utah, and we serve teens 12 to 18 who have experienced foster care or other vulnerable life realities. So the origins of this actually started, it was unintentional to become a nonprofit. So with my work as a foster parent, my family and I particularly take in teenagers. And so the last few years, we've had a few teens in our home and have been part of two different reunification cases. So we spend a lot of time with teenagers, and by nature of some of these teens that we have, that we consider family, we love so much, after reunification, finding ways to best support them. Because after reunification, I'm saying some of this terminology, maybe thinking it's common knowledge, is if there's anything I'm saying that you're like, what does that mean? Feel free to jump in. But reunification meaning we work to have the teens or youth move back home with their families. And so there's just a lot of work that's involved there. But after reunification, all of the supports are gone. And so you don't have the caseworker, therapists, other sort of professional involvements. And so it can be really difficult for a lot of families who don't have much support at all and are navigating some really intense systemic harm and generational trauma. So some of the teens that we were seeing were having some difficult times. And so I wanted to find ways of connection. And through my research, just with grad school and work, knowing how important connection is with healing and just wanting some of these teens, particularly in the summers when they're off by themselves, to have different touch points and positive experiences. So anyway, long story short, I wanted to just get them involved in some fun things. So I was reaching out to different community members who were involved from various things, from pottery to paddleboarding, all these different kinds of things, to see if I could get a group of teens to come. And they would, the first time I reached out and asked, if you can get 15 teens here, we'll host you with either free or a discount. I'm like, done. I will get 15 different teens. So that's when I started to like network on these different platforms that I was a part of. And people just came out of the woodworks and honestly just exploded. And so now we serve over 1,500 teens and we host 2 to 3 different community events. We've built out different programs for life skills and offering different forms of therapy, from equine assisted therapy to group therapy. So yeah, it just has exploded and become a life, taken on a life of its own. And now it's a nonprofit and it's a pretty amazing community of teens.
That's so cool. Back to all the different things that you've shared about, like the different ways you've volunteered, the different turns that your career path has taken. Like you said, like you're in a lot of spaces where there's a lot of trauma and you're in a lot of spaces where there's a lot of kids and a lot of teenagers. What was it that started to draw you to those spaces and to working and helping with those groups?
That's a great question. After college, I taught high school for a few years. And I think I just have always had this draw to work with teens particularly, but never in a million years would think or imagine what I would do with my life in my 30s and that I would be here. After I stopped teaching, there was a lot of different things that were happening that were pretty intense in my personal life. Shifts from and deconstruction from different belief systems and navigating my own mental health and my own personal healing. And so as I was working pretty intensely on those elements with a therapist, and I started to tune in more to myself and what kind of called out to me. And I remember in one therapy appointment, my therapist asked me, what do you do for fun? What's a hobby that you have? And I couldn't think of one thing. And that sounds like so sad to say, or maybe dramatic, but in all seriousness, like everything I was doing in my life, I guess I was just consumed my life with so many different things that I hadn't really evaluated. What do I find interesting? What makes me come alive? And so then I started like this period of self-exploration, and I've been naturally drawn to humans and the brain. And I've been so interested, maybe based on the things I've experienced and seen in my life, but that's what kind of drew me to going back to school for my master's degree. And I remember my therapist, because I started, I'm like, okay, I'll start a garden and just try and explore some different things that would make me feel excited again. And I just kept coming back to, I love reading, I love studying. And so I just kept coming back to the school idea. And I'm like, that seems like an intense step when trying to explore what I want to do. But I just kept coming back to it. So I did an online program. It was really flexible. It was an independent program as well. So I was able to still do all like the mom responsibilities. It like made me come alive again. I just loved studying the research and learning and seeing the impact of it in real time. And so it just naturally just like step by step opened up to these different spaces. After teaching, I missed that cognitive stimulation. So, and working with youth. So I became a CASA, which then opened up the doors for fostering, which then opened up this whole trajectory with Common Thread. And so it's so interesting to see what happens in life as you just take the next right step that you feel best about and the different doors that open up that way.
I love that. I love the idea about like taking the next right step, that a lot of the time that you don't really know like what the path is, what feels good or what makes sense next. And like, it's scary to do that without seeing all the way, but like what we can do is the best we can do for where we're at. That's what we have in our control.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
So I will say something I realized that we should totally define for people that I have not defined, because I know what it means, is a CASA. And that's a court-appointed special advocate. And these are people that like guardian ad litem, who are the people who are representing children who are in the state system. These attorneys, they cannot spend as much time with the kids as they would like to. So volunteers are assigned to spend time with the kids, to build relationships, to get to know them, to provide additional information and information that's coming from a party that's separate, because foster parents are there for the kids, but it's important that there's someone that's separate from the foster parents or the biological family that's providing information to the guardian ad litem.
Absolutely.
Do you feel like that's a good definition?
Yes, that was perfect. Their sole responsibility is what's in the best interest of the child, and no other. That's just like a really unique role. And the other beautiful aspect, I think, is that it's a volunteer position. So there's so many different transient positions that are interacting with kids involved within the child welfare system. But to have one person who chooses to show up and be there and to be the constant throughout the whole case is kind of special.
It is really cool because a therapist or something will be sometimes attached to the school system. And sometimes these kids end up, unfortunately, getting like moved for a few districts just because of like, that's what's best for the kids. Like the biological, like grandparent or someone is like in a different area. And the CASA can be like consistent in a way that some of the other professionals that have regions can't. So then tell me a little bit about going back to grad school. I think that is like very cool that you were like looking for a hobby and you're like, you know what? I think I'm going to do grad school. That's a big commitment. What was going into your decision and kind of what was it like to transition back to being a student? Because that can be a challenging transition.
Those are great questions. I think part of it was I felt excited because I had felt that I signed up to this narrative that I didn't know if I'd ever go back to school, and to be able to just dive back in and really explore my interests now that I was a little bit older and had more time to explore. I think in my early 20s, and maybe a lot of people relate to this, just trying to explore where what direction they want to go, the trajectory, but having pushed it to a little bit later in life with a grad school degree, I was able to explore some different topics that I knew that I was really interested in. And it was fun. And also a lot of work. It was intense. I think just in general with school, but then also being a full-time parent on top of that, there were times like I was just in a jungle gym play place, typing a paper while my kids are playing around, and just had to do unconventional ways probably with that student life. And also by nature of the pandemic, I think a lot of things were virtual. So I did miss some of that still, that interaction that happens as a full-time student, like on campus, but the learning and tapping into the different updated resources and research was so fascinating to me. And I just had to give myself patience and grace because of the unconventional ways that I was doing it. I'm like, I am a mom, so I have to figure out how to navigate of young kids that were all, they were both full-time at home still. So trying to figure out a good window to work. But I think because I was so excited and passionate about the topic, it made it doable.
And I think to your point, being a parent added challenges. Also very specifically with the field of studying, like being a parent meant like you probably had also like observed or were curious about some of the things in a whole new way because it was so applicable to like your life and to the people that you were interacting with and caring for.
Oh, yes. Yep. Absolutely. So it was really interesting to see, depending on the course, we would do different studies based on different ages with the brain development and behaviors. And so having that just real life experience of raising kids from infants all the way up to like 7 years old, and then adding in the fostering realm to be able to see some of these things in real time with regards to trauma research, and then to see how more effectively to show up in spaces where a young person has experienced, their bodies and brains have experienced a lot of trauma and chronic stress. It gave me a deeper appreciation for the content, and also I think has helped me retain the information because, as you mentioned, just seeing it in real time. Yeah,
that's really cool. It's really cool when you have opportunities to learn things that like are integrating with like very real spaces in which like you're working and existing.
Yeah, yes. And I think I've also really appreciated just the deconstruction of the idea that everything needs to happen on a certain timeline. I am just really open to the idea that everyone's life and their time schedules are so different. I'd be working with someone who's going back for school and then their 50s or 60s. Like, it's just so cool to see people explore and tap into some of these different interests. And it's never too late to start and pursue some of those things that you're really interested in. And it's really amazing to see how this the universe aligns and different opportunities and people come into your life that can showcase different elements. And anyway, I'm really tapping into that. It's never too late. Continue to pursue. And I know I'm saying that and I'm in my 30s and some people may be listening and be like, okay, that's still young. But for me, just doing a different approach than what I came into like parenting and into adulthood thinking?
I think it gets really hard to be a beginner the older you get. I think you expect that you're going to be new at things, like all through growing up. Like when you're a kid, you expect that you're going to be new at things. And then like you like are going to college and like you expect that it's new. But I feel like a lot of people, when you get like through your bachelor's degree or whether it's like your first few jobs, like just the beginning of adulthood, it starts to feel like, okay, like I should figure it out. Or like just the vulnerability of being a beginner just can stop some people. So I think it is an important reminder, like even if you are technically still young, like it just gets harder as you get older to be willing to do that. And I think it's really important to not let that mentality like overtake your life.
That was so beautifully said. I couldn't agree more.
I would love to know, what were some things that you learned about yourself while you were going back and getting your master's degree?
Ooh, that's another great question. This kind of overlapped with a lot of, so deconstructing and then reconstructing my life, my different belief systems, and also just like how I wanted to show up as a person, a friend, a parent. I think grad school coupled that. So it was a pretty intense like self-growth period in my life. And so coupling all of that together, some of the big takeaways included, I needed to have a strong belief in myself and my abilities. I think having a support system is critical for all of these different factors. But at the end of the day, with some of these different pursuits that were so independent, I realized how much I needed to personally believe in myself to do those things, because no one else was going to push me to do them. I found the power of connection and deep, authentic relationships in my life. I found as I felt that I was doing all these different things, particularly navigating really and researching really heavy content, I needed to find others times in my life and in the day to buoy myself up with joy. I don't naturally lean into just going to have tons of fun and not feel like I need to have it benefit someone or have it have worth or productivity. And so I learned that I need to prioritize that in my life. And so planning times with friends or going to watch a reality show with my grandma on Monday night, I just needed to make time and space for those things so that I felt that I was able to sustainably continue going on learning and reading and applying all of this content. Yeah, I think I just gained a deeper love and appreciation for myself and learning. I think right now I would say I feel closer to the person that I feel like I want to be than I've ever felt in my life. It took a lot of time to get to a point where I felt that I could explore and get curious and appreciate myself. I just don't think I do that very often.
That is a really cool feeling. Like, it is hard to be a person and it's hard to have like ideas of what's important to us and then see the ways that we're like falling short or not measuring up to them. So that it's really exciting that you've been able to like do a lot of the work and like feel like you're in that spot. That's really cool.
Thanks. Yeah, it's been a process. It's been, I'd say, some pretty extremes. I went through maybe my late 20s experiencing some really low lows and intense depression and suicide ideation. And it got to a point where it got really scary. And so I think for so long in my life, I prioritized everyone else's feelings, everyone else's experiences, making sure everyone else is okay. And I don't do that for myself. And I started to see that as I studied all of these different things, that this applies to me too. I need to take better care of myself. And it's still, I think this is going to be an ebb and flow kind of process in my life, but I'm trying and that's like a big step.
That's really cool. I think for so many people, and I also think something that women experience a lot is like realizing that all that care we're giving to other people or all that care that is given to other people, like it has to start with an individual as well, like with the person giving the care.
And I feel that with my kids too. I'm like, I want them to be able to witness a mom or just have this relationship with a person who feel like takes care of themselves, who feels alive, who isn't like this martyr approach where I'm trying to figure out how to describe this. I so easily will sacrifice myself on an altar for other people in so many different capacities. But I know that if I do that, then I can't be the mom that I want to be to them and the kind of friend and the kind of person. So just trying to figure out how to prioritize my own heart and mind in this one wild, precious life.
So these things that you've learned about yourself, how have they been changing or supporting or shaping the work that you're doing? Like, And even throughout your master's degree, like you were working like really hard and giving back to your community, like you've completed that now. And like, you have so many different things that you're a part of. So how have you taken those lessons that you've learned and how are they shaping what you're doing now?
The lessons that I learned about myself or just what I've learned in grad school?
I think both would be really fun. The lessons that you've learned about yourself and what you've learned in grad school. I think it would be cool to hear about that.
Okay. Yeah. So I guess since we're still on the brainwave of how it's impacted me, knowing my personality type, I work really hard and yeah, I will just get things done and I'm really efficient. So I've known because of this about myself, it was great to be able to finish grad school, but I also have to pace myself. And so with starting a nonprofit and wanting to build that this community from the ground up, it's been an incredible like grassroots effort. And I have to keep reminding myself I need to take breaks, meaning like not working 9 a.m. to midnight every night. I need to be able to prioritize joy and take care of myself because I can't sustainably do this. But on a more like professional level, a lot of the research, the things that I've learned coupled with just my experience and exposure with working with youth in different capacities has given me greater insight and understanding and trying to build a community that's trauma-informed, that's inclusive, diverse, and centers the right voices. And for example, last night, for Common Thread, we have a teen advisory board. So we have 15 teens of all different ages, lived experiences that come and we meet once a month and we talk about some of their opinions, perspectives, lived experiences. And so we can always center and focus their voices. So it's a community for the teens, by the teens, and being able to create spaces where teens of all different lived experiences can show up and feel safe has been so critical for the community. And I attribute a lot of the trauma-informed research and knowledge that I have to helping to support that foundational structure for that to happen. Also just working to connect, just navigating research, seeing that there's so many different perspectives and sources, trying to connect and work with lots of different partners that align with our values, but also center different voices and experiences because it's so critical particularly to talk about systemic harm and to center those who have been most impacted so that we can most effectively show up as a community. So I think some of those ethics have come into play. And I think just having more insight on trauma has just given me more compassion and empathy. I know we talk a lot about trauma in like a capital T sense, but everyone experiences trauma or adverse experiences in our life. And so that directly impacts who we are as people. And so I feel like it's helped me so much with working with other people and navigating different, I don't know, behaviors, responses, and having a lot of compassion and empathy for people. So I think both of those, making sure I don't burn out and have that secondary trauma, but then also the academic side of trying to build a structure that supports people. So
that's really cool. So what are like some things that you're hoping for next? And this could be like concrete with things you want to see happening with like Common Thread or some of your other work, or it could be more like more abstract, like maybe things you're hoping for yourself or things you're like interested in achieving. I just would love to know, as you've done this work and as you've gotten to this point, like what are some of the things that you're hoping for or planning for as like next steps?
Again, you have such great questions, thought-provoking questions. I would say on a literal sense with Common Thread and some of these other different areas that I'm really actively involved in, just that continual development and expansion and hoping to see this potentially expand to different states across the country and to create more safe spaces for teens who don't have much support in their lives. On that sense, I'm really motivated that way. But on a more personal note, I'm not sure. And I find a lot of liberation in that I just continue to hope to lean into that self-exploration, that curiosity, that excitement, that drive, and to trust myself more in navigating that process and leaning into the things that like spark and make me feel alive. Mm-hmm. So I don't have a concrete specific outline, but I think that's what I'm wanting, is to lean into that and yeah, to continue to do the next best thing that I feel in my heart, my mind, and for the people that I'm responsible for, and to see where that leads me.
I like that. I think that can be a very freeing spot to be in, especially if you've worried for a long time about a timeline, or and especially a timeline that was not a timeline of your choosing. I think it can be very exciting to get to a point where you're like, I don't know what's happening next. And that's what's fun. That's what's special about this time.
Yes. Yeah. Giving yourself that space to breathe. I feel like I've been so rigid and overachieving in all of my life aspects. It's nice to just, yeah, give some space for that breath to make the next best decision. So
I just love Frozen 2. I love Anna's song about doing the next right thing. And obviously she's singing from a very like sad and scared place, but like no matter where you're at in your life, like that can also be a very happy thing. Like being like, I'm just going to do the next best thing.
Yeah. I think when we align with our true authentic self and align with our values and are just giving our best, it's really remarkable to see just the small things that may come into our lives and or that we may work to come into our lives. And so it just, yeah, there's a lot of excitement in the unknown, but to just continue. But I think a big key is living authentically, because then the things that are coming in will align with maybe some of those passions or desires or pursuits that way. And maybe for me, that took a while to like unravel, deconstruct, pull back some layers, and it's painful and hard and took quite a few years. But I found that coupled with the ambition and the passion, it's a sweet spot.
Is there anything that's come to mind that you haven't had a chance to share that you wanted to?
No. Yeah. I'm an open book. I'm happy to talk about anything, but I also wanted to be in alignment with the focus of the podcast. And I'm just really grateful for this opportunity. So thank you for reaching out and asking me.
Oh, I'm so grateful for your time. Will you tell people where they can find like your work on the internet if they want to learn more about Common Thread or see some of the things that you're doing or just learn more about what you've shared?
Yeah, so I share a lot more about my personal life and my own personal writings and advocacy on my Instagram account at Rach Garrett. And to find Common Thread, you can find it's Common Thread Utah for our website or Common Thread_community for Instagram. We're also on Facebook as well.
Awesome. Thank you so much. This has been so fun.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you for the opportunity again.
Thank you so much to Rachel for her time, and thank you so much to you for listening. I am so glad you're here, and I'm glad you come back, even though I'm a little bit inconsistent. You can find this podcast on Instagram at Not a Backup Plan. You can email me at madelinek@gmail.com. Please rate and review the podcast. It really helps with other people finding this work. And remember, this is your life. It's not a plan B.